Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with two major national stories. President Joe Biden has signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law, one of the most significant pieces of legislation in recent years. It includes major steps to combat climate change, reduce prescription drug costs, and cut the federal deficit. And we'll have details on how that new law could impact you. The FBI has found secret documents at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida after a search warrant was approved that cited the espionage law and other federal statutes. Now, a judge is considering making public portions of the affidavit justifying that search, and we'll have a full analysis for you on our show today. In local news, the County of San Diego has opened East County's first safe parking area for people living in their cars. A plane crash in El Cajon on Thursday struck a vehicle before landing under a freeway overpass. La Mesa City Council approved a cannabis dispensary, overturning its prior denial after a legal challenge. El Cajon's City Council has voted to put a measure on the ballot that would raise the city's sales tax. The new Novavax vaccine for COVID-19 is now available in San Diego County, and we'll tell you where you can find it on today's show. On our Arts and Music report, hear about a pair of Santee filmmakers who won an award at the San Diego Movie Awards for their first-time entry. Hospitals throughout our county now have emergency rooms that are senior-friendly, the county reports. From California News Service, hear about a student loan debt challenge and why California ranks 33rd nationally in child welfare. From 2022 Talks at Public News Service, we'll have some additional national news stories today, including guilty pleas by the chief financial officer of former President Trump's family business, who pled guilty to 15 felony counts. We'll also have the latest on federal efforts to expand availability of monkeypox vaccines. Cal Fire has a new helicopter, and it's stationed in our region for fire season. A man is dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound after a standoff and fire at an East County home Friday, and we'll have details. Then on Ready, Set, Grow, Master Gardener Connie Beck will have some water-saving tips for you. And finally, famed local sports writer Jack Murphy's statue has been moved to the new SDSU Snapdragon Stadium, but his name and accomplishments are not on the statue's plaque, which only acknowledges donors, not the man who helped bring both the Padres and the Chargers to San Diego in his heyday. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Elijah McKee with a Capitol Report. President Joe Biden has signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law, calling it one of the most significant laws in our history. He added, "With this law, the American people won and the special interests lost." The bill includes the nation's largest ever investment in clean energy, which is estimated to attain 2/3 of the Paris Climate Change Accord goals in 10 years. The bill also includes major healthcare reforms, including allowing Medicare to negotiate for lower prescription drug costs and extending expiring healthcare subsidies. The measure is projected to reduce the deficit by $1.5 trillion this year, a step supported by 126 economists, including former Treasury secretaries, Federal Reserve vice chairs, and Nobel laureates. The landmark $750 billion bill, backed by Democrats, passed the House and Senate without a single Republican vote. Republicans objected primarily to the bill's plan to levy a 15% minimum tax on large corporations and a 1% tax on stock buybacks, as well as hire more IRS agents to collect taxes dodged by the wealthiest 1% of taxpayers. Here are details on what the bill includes. In healthcare, insulin costs for diabetics on Medicare will be capped at $35 a month. Total out-of-pocket prescription medicine costs will be capped at $2,000 per year for people with Medicare Part D. 5 to 7 million Medicare recipients will have drug costs lowered as Medicare can, for the first time, negotiate buying prescription drugs in bulk. Pharmaceutical manufacturers must pay Medicare's proposed price, or pay a 1,900% excise tax on all sales of the drug. The law extends by 3 years a pandemic program that reduced health insurance premiums for 13 million low- and middle-income Americans, saving them around $800 a year each on health insurance premiums. 3 million more Americans will have health insurance under the law, and free vaccine access will be assured for adults on Medicare and Medicaid. Clean energy components include electric vehicle tax credits of up to $7,500 for new electric vehicles and $4,000 for used electric vehicles, a 30% tax credit for rooftop solar, and additional consumer rebates for buying energy-efficient home appliances and heat pumps. The bill also includes incentives to build a clean energy economy by 2030, including ambitious goals for solar panels, wind turbines, grid-scale battery stores, and clean energy projects at rural electric cooperatives. It protects 2 million acres of national forests. It also cuts pollution by reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 1 gigaton by 2030, 10 times more impact than any prior climate measure enacted. Reducing pollution from fossil fuels is projected to prevent 3,900 premature deaths and up to 100,000 asthma attacks per year. The new law provides incentives for airlines to buy lower carbon fuel. It gives incentives for industrial firms to capture and store carbon dioxide, and it boosts federal investment and loans in emergency technologies such as hydrogen power. To fill short-term energy needs and gain support for the bill that passed the Senate by a one-vote margin, the bill authorizes leasing for oil and gas drilling on up to 20 million acres of land and 600 million acres of ocean, an action opposed by some environmentalists, who called this step a poison pill. Tax reforms are another key aspect of the Inflation Reduction Act. Some large and profitable corporations have paid zero federal income taxes in recent years, including 55 of the nation's biggest and wealthiest corporations. The top 1% of earners evade an estimated $60 billion in taxes annually. To address those issues and provide revenue for new programs in the bill, the Inflation Reduction Act will impose a 15% minimum tax on the largest and most profitable corporations. It is estimated to generate $124 billion over 10 years by collecting taxes already owed by wealthy tax dodgers and big corporations, according to the Congressional Budget Office. A 1% excise tax on corporate stock buybacks aims to close a loophole that has allowed foreign investors and some U.S. shareholders to dodge taxes on corporate cash distributions if they're paid in stock repurchases instead of dividends. It provides $80 billion to the Internal Revenue Service to restore budget cuts under Trump. The IRS can use those funds to hire more agents to collect past due payments and to answer phone lines to help consumers. Taxes will not go up on any family earning less than $400,000 a year. Some provisions originally in the president's plan were removed to get the bill passed. These included paid family leave and sick leave, universal preschool, provisions to lower college costs, and extend an enhanced child credit. While it is possible that if Republicans win control of Congress in the future, some provisions of the bill could be repealed, many of these measures are slated to take effect before 2025, when the next presidential election winner would take office, making it less likely that popular measures, such as lower prescription drug costs, would be rolled back.
Agents from the FBI removed over 20 containers, including 11 sets of classified documents, during a search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida on August 8th. Trump's removal of documents from the White House and his handling of top-secret information has potentially serious national security implications, as well as potential criminal liability, although Trump has not been charged with any crime as of now. A property receipt made public this week reveals that the documents found by the FBI include four sets marked top secret, three sets of secret documents, three confidential sets, and one set of top secret and sensitive compartmented information, or TSSCI. The latter is a category that even some people with top secret clearance cannot access, such as nuclear secrets and details on U.S. intelligence gathering operations overseas. Mark Zaid, an attorney specializing in national security, said people who work in the national security sector at any level know that they should not keep documents labeled TSSCI, National Public Radio, or NPR reports. The search was conducted lawfully after the FBI obtained a search warrant which authorized confiscation of, quote, all physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed in violation of 18 U.S.C. 793, 2071, or 1519. Now, 18 U.S.C. Section 793, that's the 1917 Espionage Act. It's intended to combat spying, primarily. It restricts possession of national defense information, regardless of classified status, and it can be punished by up to 10 years in prison. This has been used in recent years against leakers of military and national security secrets, including Edward Snowden, former military intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Laws 2071 and 1519 further protect official U.S. documents from concealment, tampering, and destruction. 2071 can result in 3 years in prison, and 1519 can lead to 20 years in prison. Neither stipulates that such material has to be classified. There is also a law that prohibits removal of classified documents to an unauthorized location. In fact, Trump bolstered the punishment of this law while in office from 1 to 5 years. While this law was not cited in the warrant, potential charges under it could also be possible. Presidents and others are prohibited from taking home classified materials at all, and when presidents leave office, they are required to return all government property. The federal government has already made numerous efforts to recover the classified documents, but Trump largely failed to comply. The National Archives and Records Administration is responsible for ensuring proper transfer of all governmental property whenever a president leaves office. The archives asked for the return of documents improperly removed from the White House, and Trump's attorney reported that all items had been returned. However, with some items still missing, the archives asked the U.S. Department of Justice, or DOJ, to investigate, and the DOJ obtained a subpoena. When that did not result in return of the missing documents, the DOJ obtained a court-ordered search warrant. The warrant and property receipt have been made public. That's a rare occurrence in an ongoing investigation, but Trump disclosed the search himself and did not object to unsealing of warrant materials. On Thursday, August 18th, the judge who signed the original search warrant ordered the DOJ to prepare a redacted version of the lengthy affidavit that explains the justification for search. Judge Bruce Reinhart, the Florida judge presiding over the matter, will consider whether to unseal that redacted version and make it publicly available in response to requests from various news organizations. The DOJ has objected to its release since it could contain national security details, names of witnesses or whistleblowers, targets of a criminal probe, and other sensitive information. It could also have a chilling effect on other witnesses considering coming forward, considering some have already been threatened in related cases. During the court hearing, the DOJ revealed that the search found evidence of obstruction at Mar-a-Lago and that unsealing the affidavit could lead to more obstruction. Trump's lawyer was present, but did not seek to release or block release of the affidavit's contents. The FBI has provided only general descriptions of the classified levels of most documents due to their sensitive and secretive nature. However, some details were released. The documents include a presidential grant of clemency for Trump ally Roger Stone and unspecified information about the president of France, for instance. The Washington Post has cited multiple anonymous sources who reportedly said the classified documents related to nuclear weapons were among the items sought by the FBI. This has not been confirmed, although release of a redacted affidavit could clarify this matter, nor do we know whether or not the FBI actually found any nuclear-related documents. Trump claimed on his social media platform Truth Social, they didn't need to seize anything. They could have had it any time they wanted without playing politics and breaking into Mar-a-Lago. The FBI did not break in. The agency had a warrant lawfully obtained from a court. Trump had failed to turn over the classified materials despite multiple requests, including that issuance of a subpoena for him to do so, as we've mentioned. Trump has alternately claimed that the FBI planted documents and, contradictorily, that he had a blanket order in the White House to declassify any documents that he took home while president. CNN, however, contacted 18 former top Trump administration officials. All of them confirmed that no such order existed. Collectively, those officials spanned the entire tenure of Trump's presidency. John Kelly, Trump's chief of staff from 2017 through 2019, told CNN, nothing approaching an order that foolish was ever given. He added that anyone at the White House would not have allowed such an order without, quote, dying in the ditch trying to stop it. Another senior White House official told CNN that Trump's claim was total nonsense, adding, if that's true, where is the order with his signature on it? David Loudman, former chief of the Justice Department's Counterintelligence Division, explained that declassification must include reviews by agencies such as the CIA, the NSA, the Department of Energy, the State Department, and the Defense Department. There is no evidence that any officials at those agencies were notified of a declassification proposal by Trump. It just can't be in his head, Loudman told CNN. Attorney General Merrick Garland discussed the warrant and search in a speech on August 11th. The department does not take such a decision lightly, he stated. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken. Garland made clear that there was a reason for the search and that the federal agents involved acted properly under probable cause. He also condemned the backlash the FBI has received since the search, including an attempted attack on an FBI building in Cincinnati in which the attacker, a Trump supporter, was killed, and a threat to release a dirty nuclear bomb in front of the FBI's Washington, D.C. headquarters was received, NPR reported. Hateful rhetoric has been spewing on Trump's social media platform. Trump and some GOP supporters have been vocal in casting the search as a prosecutorial misconduct and a political maneuver, given that Trump has voiced his ambitions to run for the presidency again in 2024. The investigation into the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago is just one of several state and federal investigations that the former president is facing, including a criminal inquiry in Georgia over Trump pressuring election officials to alter election results and a civil probe in New York into whether Trump and his family's real estate business fraudulently inflated values of his hotels, golf courses, and other properties to obtain favorable loans. On Thursday, August 18th, Alan Weisselberg, chief financial officer for Trump's family business, pleaded guilty in a New York court to conspiring with Trump's company to commit 15 felony crimes, Associated Press reports. Weisselberg struck a deal with prosecutors that could make him a star witness against the company at a trial this fall. Trump has called the case a political witch hunt. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
East County's first safe parking site for people living in their vehicles opened August 10th beneath a freeway overpass on Magnolia in unincorporated El Cajon. The county-run safe parking area is on the same site where homeless people have camped out for years. The large former encampment has been cleared away after complaints over sanitation issues and other concerns. But now the site has been transformed through outreach led by the county's Department of Homeless Solutions and Equitable Communities, in collaboration with multiple county departments as well as organizations such as Alpha Project and Crisis House. In addition to safe parking, the area will offer supportive services, porta-potties, and hand-washing stations. According to a video released by the county, people living in vehicles are typically homeless for the first time. The goal is to help them go from cars into housing without winding up on the streets. This model has been so successful elsewhere that the wait list for safe parking sites is typically 50 households on any given night, the county reports. People who were at the former tent camp were all provided with information on where to find shelter and services, a county news release states. The county views the new safe parking site as a compassionate solution. El Cajon City Manager Graham Mitchell helped persuade the county to clear the former tent camp. Though the site was on county land just outside of the city of El Cajon's borders, problems such as shoplifting by certain camp residents had plagued merchants in El Cajon. Asked his reaction to the county's new safe parking area on the same site, Mitchell told East County Magazine, "For years, the city of El Cajon has been asking the county to be part of the solution towards ending homelessness in East County." Though the city has not taken a formal position on the safe parking site, Mitchell said, "This is the county's first significant effort, so personally, I am pleased." The city manager adds that he has spoken with county staff about the safe parking lot and met with the operators. He concludes, as long as it operates as it does in other parts of the county, I do not think the city has reason to be concerned. For newly homeless people living in their vehicles, however, the new safe parking lot will provide a welcoming place to park overnight while getting help to find a more permanent housing solution. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
A small plane made a harrowing crash landing Thursday morning in El Cajon. The single-engine plane was on approach to Gillespie Field when a distress call was received by the control tower. The pilot of the 1951 Cessna tried to land on Interstate 8 around 10:25 a.m., but ended up touching down between the east and westbound overpasses of Interstate 8. The plane clipped the hood of an SUV driven by an Alpine woman before coming to rest on Greenfield Drive. Fortunately, neither the woman nor her dog that was in her vehicle were injured. Bystanders helped the pilot, who was the only occupant, out of the plane's wreckage before emergency crews arrived. He was then transported to a local hospital with serious injuries. El Cajon Police, Heartland Fire and Rescue, SDG&E, and Caltrans responded to the crash site. The cause of the crash remains under investigation. There have been at least 41 aircraft crashes into San Diego County neighborhoods since 2010, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. Those crashes resulted in 36 deaths and 25 people who were seriously injured. About half of the crashes in San Diego County involved planes taking off from or landing at Gillespie Field, a busy airfield with over 600 flights each day on average. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
The La Mesa City Council has voted to approve a conditional use permit and allow Urban Leaf to build a cannabis dispensary on Hillside Drive. The council unanimously voted to appeal its earlier approval of an appeal that had blocked the project after applicant Urban Leaf filed a legal challenge. The Urban Leaf dispensary project was initially approved by the Design Review Board and the Planning Commission last year, but in October, an appeal was filed by Dana Stevens, Executive Director of CASA, or Community Action Service Advocacy. The developers plan to demolish and replace a single-family home on a lot adjacent to other houses and across the street from the La Mesa Springs Shopping Center. Stevens asserted in her appeal that the proposed dispensary would violate path of travel rules and set a precedent for commercial development adjacent to residential areas. In February, the City Council voted 3-2 to uphold the appeal filed by Stevens and blocked approval of the dispensary. But after Urban Leaf filed a petition with the Superior Court seeking a writ of mandate to order the city to issue a conditional use permit, the city asked staff to revisit the project. Carrie Cusiak, Director of Community Development, presented findings to the City Council on August 9th. City staff found the project is technically in compliance with city law and recommended that the council uphold the Planning Commission's approval and reverse its approval of Stevens' appeal. Stevens argued that a traffic study done in 2017 was inadequate because it was before the 230-unit Jefferson Housing Project was built nearby and before the opening of Cookies, another cannabis dispensary next to the Urban Leaf proposed site. But Cusiak said not enough had changed to warrant a new study. La Mesa, a city of just 9 square miles, already has 18 recreational and medical marijuana dispensaries. That's more than the number of pharmacies in the city, so Stevens contended that there's no lack of access for residents who want marijuana. She called Urban Leaf a bully for throwing its weight around legally. Councilmember Laura Lothian asked if the city had any legal authority to deny the project. Glenn Sabine, La Mesa's city attorney, said he did not see a valid legal basis to deny the proposal, and he predicted the city would lose a lawsuit if it denied the project. Vice Mayor Colin Parent stated that the law seems clear and the voters supported Measure U, the measure that legalized cannabis. So he concluded, "We live in a democracy and we live by the rule of law." The City Council unanimously passed the conditional use permit for Urban Leaf. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Marie Johnson with a Crime Beat report. The FBI's San Diego division has located at least 17 human trafficking victims, including a minor, as part of the nationwide Operation Cross Country 7 operation. The national FBI-led effort partnered with agencies across the U.S. to recover 141 adult and 84 minor victims of human trafficking, including 37 missing children. The youngest victim was 11 years old. Agents and investigators also arrested 85 suspects for child sexual exploitation and human trafficking. Special Agent in Charge Stacy Moy from the FBI San Diego field office says, "We are proud to have worked alongside our law enforcement partners in our efforts against these horrific crimes." Agent Moy adds that the FBI will also provide victims with resources to get the help they need and to hold traffickers accountable. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the Justice Department is committed to doing everything in our power to combat the insidious crimes of human trafficking that devastate survivors and their families. Garland thanked the FBI professionals and partnering law enforcement agencies for their help to rescue trafficking survivors, including exploited children. As part of Operation Cross Country 7, the FBI worked with over 200 state, local, and federal partners and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children as it conducted operations over a two-week period. Locally, the FBI worked with the San Diego County Sheriff Police Departments in San Diego, Escondido, National City, and Chula Vista, Homeland Security, the California Department of Justice, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, San Diego Unified School District's Police Department, and the San Diego County Child Welfare Services Health and Human Services Agency. FBI Director Christopher Wray says that human trafficking is among the most heinous crimes the FBI encounters. Unfortunately, he warns, such crimes against both adults and children are far more common than most people realize. As we did in this operation, the FBI and our partners will continue to find and arrest traffickers, identify and help victims, and raise awareness of the exploitation of our most vulnerable populations.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from El Cajon. El Cajon's City Council has unanimously approved a ballot initiative that would increase the city's sales tax. If approved by voters on November 8th, this measure would repeal Proposition J, the half-cent sales tax enacted in 2008 to fund basic services, and replace it with a new 1% tax, or 1 cent per dollar. Mayor Bill Wells, a Republican, stated during the council's deliberations, "Throughout most of my political career, I've been against every tax increase I've seen. I've never voted to raise taxes." But all five Republicans on the council ultimately voted for the measure. The mayor acknowledged, "No matter what happens, we are going to get a political beating in the next 6 to 8 weeks, but ultimately our highest priority is to protect people." The new 1 cent sales tax would remain locally controlled and generate an estimated $24 million, according to the city. Funds would be used for programs sought by residents, such as to address homelessness, hire more police officers and other emergency responders, and resolve infrastructure needs. El Cajon experiences a greater number of fire department calls per capita than surrounding cities. It also gets a higher number of crime reports per capita than neighboring communities. City Manager Graham Mitchell stated in the meeting that El Cajon has about 80% more fire emergency calls compared to the rest of the county. But the city has far lower property tax revenues than more affluent cities such as Carlsbad or Encinitas, making sales tax a critical source of revenue. A poll by Probowski Research of 400 El Cajon voters found that reducing homelessness is by far their top priority. Voters said they would be more apt to support a tax increase if there's oversight, so the ballot initiative would also require a citizens' oversight committee to assure that funds are spent to meet communities' needs. Not everyone is on board with the proposed tax hike. In an email to East County Magazine, El Cajon resident Robert Gare objected to the council asking for more money for the same type of services touted before under Prop J. He questioned the need for the tax hike, noting, "Let's not forget, they all just recently voted to give themselves a 10% raise in salary." He also noted that the city recently hired 10 new police officers, though the city says those officers were hired using reserve funds on a one-time basis, and to keep the new officers on the payroll will require more revenues. If approved by voters, the new 1 cent sales tax would remain in place permanently unless it is repealed by voters in the future.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, The Scanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Elijah McKee with a health report. The Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently approved the Novavax vaccine for prevention of COVID-19. The new Novavax vaccine is now available in San Diego County. The Novavax vaccine is the fourth COVID-19 vaccine authorized for use in the United States, and the first to use a protein-based approach commonly used in other vaccines. Officials hope that the traditional vaccine design will be attractive to those who have been wary of the newer mRNA technology, and for people with allergies to some ingredients in the mRNA vaccines. You can get Novavax at local healthcare providers, retail pharmacies, and community clinics, as well as county public health centers and community vaccination events. You can make an appointment or find a walk-in clinic at myturn.ca.gov. Novavax has been authorized as a two-dose series, given 3 to 8 weeks apart to adults age 18 or older. Other vaccines already on the market are recommended for children. Clinical trials showed that the vaccine series is 90% effective at preventing mild, moderate, and severe COVID-19. Those trials were done prior to the Omicron variant, however. The CDC recently announced that unvaccinated people are 96% more likely to die of COVID-19 than people who are fully vaccinated and who received two booster shots of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines already on the market. Unvaccinated people are also 4 times more likely to die of COVID than those who are fully vaccinated but haven't yet had booster shots. Everyone 6 months and older can get COVID-19 vaccines at no cost. For those who received an mRNA vaccine, boosters are now available for people 5 years old and up. Parental consent is required for eligible minors to be vaccinated. Another new vaccine is in the works that, if approved, aims to target newer variants. But federal health officials advise the public not to wait on the new vaccine. That's because COVID remains rampant, and while even vaccinated people may still get mild cases, existing vaccines provide strong protection against death, hospitalization, or severe cases of COVID-19.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight. I'm your host, David Cotton.
This is Marie Johnson with East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight. Two Santee filmmakers have been named Best First-Time Filmmakers in the first annual San Diego Movie Awards. A.B. Lefcourt and Rachel L. Morani collaborated on a 10-minute short film titled The Missed Flight, which was featured among a block of movie shorts on the second day of the San Diego Movie Awards Best of the Fest event earlier this month. Both Morani and Lefcourt have an extensive background in theater as well as film, performing in many local productions. Morani had been on stage with Pickwick Players and East County Production Group in Freaky Friday and Footloose, which were both performed at the Carlton Hills Middle School Theater. Their film, The Missed Flight, won Best Short Drama at the Culver City Film Festival. And according to Lefcourt, the Santee duo has been receiving various other awards for the film. Morani was also nominated as Best Actress for Rachel L. Morani and won. Morani owns a business in El Cajon and is known by many for her service on the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce's Board of Directors. She says she was excited to represent East County in the film festival this year. Lefcourt has been a copywriter for many years, writing TV advertising content. He says after years of writing ad copy, it has been a natural inclination for me to go into screenwriting. The Missed Flight was the first project that they, Lefcourt and Moreni, produced and wrote together. Moreni says they are fortunate to have Ellery Yu as a director and to have worked with an Emmy Award-winning staff. The Missed Flight was filmed at Palomar Airport in San Diego's North County. It's about how two young lovers who planned to elope but became separated due to a misunderstanding. Years later, they meet again in a chance encounter at an airport. During their brief encounter, several profound revelations are made about their lives before departure time. Lefcourt says it's compelling. The film's tagline is, "What might have been." The inspiration for the film originated from a short assignment at one of Moreni's acting classes. During a question and answer session at the San Diego Music Awards Film Festival, Moreni, who played the female lead role, said that the film took months to make and that this was her first time working as a producer. Moreni said, "I could not have foreseen the challenges of being a producer for a film and how much more involved it is than just being an actor," adding that the crew was challenged by the COVID-19 pandemic, which interrupted the filmmaking process. The first ever San Diego Movie Awards Best of Fest Film Festival took place at Balboa Park in the Museum of Photographic Arts. Its mission is to recognize and honor filmmakers from all over the world and to recognize each artist involved in the process.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. County Board of Supervisors Chair Nathan Fletcher, parks officials, and others officially kicked off Experience the Outdoors on August 10th. That's a campaign to give more San Diegans opportunities to enjoy nature and the county's regional parks. Here's what Supervisor Fletcher had to say.
The goal of this program is simple. It is to get more San Diegans out into the incredible resources that are available to you, often resources people are completely unaware exist right in their own backyards. The Park 101 First Time Series provides hands-on education for people who are looking to have an experience that maybe they've never had before. If you want to try something new, this is the program for you.
Now, this campaign is designed specifically to attract people, children, teens, and families who haven't been to parks before, whether it's because they don't have outdoor equipment or they're not aware of the free programs the county offers. The campaign will include a RAD Regional Parks event series that features a different county regional park and at least three events every month, a ride on mountain biking challenge, and a Parks 101 first-timer series. The latter series will teach participants outdoor essentials under the direction of county staff, including things like how to hike and mountain bike safely, how to camp, fish, kayak, and even rock climb. It's designed specifically for those people who, for various reasons, are newcomers to outdoor experiences. Fees are waived, and all equipment is provided for you. You can learn more at sdparks.org and click on the Experience the Outdoors image.
Officials from San Diego County's Health and Human Services Agency, local hospitals, and healthcare agencies gathered Thursday to celebrate our county becoming the first in the nation to earn a region-wide, senior-friendly emergency department accreditation for all 18 of its hospitals. The Geriatric Emergency Department accreditation means that emergency room visits will be more effective and less stressful for local seniors. Elderly patients make nearly one-third of all local emergency room visits. The geriatric emergency departments are designed to treat and care for seniors and the unique medical complications they may present when they come to the emergency rooms. Those include frailty and mobility issues, dementias, and the use of multiple medications for chronic medical conditions. The ERs also feature staff trained and dedicated to emergency care for older adults, including nurses, case managers, and social workers. The accreditation means that 100% of seniors in the county will have access to senior-friendly emergency room care. Officials said only about 15% of seniors have that access nationwide. The Regional Geriatric Emergency Department accreditation effort was part of the San Diego Senior Emergency Care Initiative, a first-of-its-kind public-private partnership spearheaded by the County of San Diego and West Health at the end of 2019 as part of the county's inaugural Aging Roadmap. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The Golden State has just launched the California Student Loan Debt Challenge to let public service employees like teachers, law enforcement, nurses, and government workers know that time is running out to restructure their student loans. The Biden administration has temporarily loosened the rules of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which wipes away a person's remaining college debt after 10 years on the job. But State Attorney General Rob Bonta warns that people need to apply for the waiver by October 31st or miss out on tens of thousands of dollars in debt relief.
Nearly 1 million Californians can qualify for public service loan forgiveness, but only about 10,000 have received it. So let's get those numbers up.
The state is also asking public service employers to publicize the waiver to their workers, who can now claim credit for years of payments that had been excluded under previous rules and thus reach the 10-year mark earlier. The waiver applies regardless of the repayment plan, the loan type, or the timeliness and extent of past payments. Find out more on the website studentaid.gov/PSLF. Bonta points out that he sued the last administration because the Department of Education was denying the vast majority of PSLF applications.
During the first round of eligible loan cancellations, the Trump administration denied 99%. My office sued. Congress took action. We joined with the advocates here, and ultimately we won the fight.
The state blames the low rate of participation on poor administration of the program, misconduct by some of the loan servicers, and a highly complex application process. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org. The Golden State ranks 33rd in child well-being, according to the new Kids Count data book from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. In the report, California scored just 37th in education and 45th in economic well-being. Kelly Hardy with the nonprofit Children Now says a big part of the problem is that too many families spend more than 30% of their income on housing.
California is once again dead last in cost of housing. No surprise to anyone who lives here, but it really does have an impact on families and their ability to meet kids' needs.
The report also looked at kids' mental health and found a 70% increase in youth depression and anxiety in California between 2016 and 2020, the second largest jump in the nation. On the plus side, California is 7th in the nation for getting kids insured at 97%. Experts credit lawmakers' vote in 2015 to open up Medi-Cal to undocumented children. The report links poverty to a decline in mental health. Leslie Boissier with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says she's disappointed that Congress let the pandemic-era extended child tax credit expire.
It's incredibly important that decision makers seize the opportunity and the lessons learned during the COVID-19 period when more resources were provided to families so that we can make sure that every child has their basic needs met, that fewer children live in poverty, and that the overall well-being of children in this country increases.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The Department of Justice has indicated they think that it will reveal too many details about the scope of their investigation, and it may reveal those that are cooperating in the investigation or additional targets.
Former U.S. Attorney and Executive Director of Right on Crime, Brett Tolman, on the FBI's search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. A Florida judge on Thursday said he believes the affidavit used to justify the FBI's search of Mar-a-Lago should be partially released and has given the Department of Justice 1 week to provide a redacted copy of the document. Alan Weisselberg, who worked for decades as chief financial officer of the Trump family business, pleaded guilty on Thursday to 15 counts ranging from grand larceny to tax fraud to falsifying business records. He was accused of dodging taxes on lavish fringe benefits he got from the company. White House and health industry officials say they're moving some manufacturing of the monkeypox vaccine to the U.S. in an effort to speedily get more doses to communities. The move comes after criticism that the Biden administration has been slow to secure adequate supply. Secretary of Health and Human Services Javier Becerra says the decision is part of a new phase of efforts to stop the virus.
We will also now surge and target vaccines and treatments when and where that can be most effective.
The Senate Leadership Fund, a political action committee associated with Senate Minority Leader and Republican Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, is reportedly investing $28 million in radio and television ads in Ohio in support of Republican Senate candidate J.D. Vance, who has been endorsed by Trump. Here's Vance campaigning earlier this week.
Go to a steel mill and see how much natural gas they use, because you need high-quality natural gas to produce steel. That's true of nearly everything that is made in this country. It requires low-cost energy.
Vance is running against Democratic Representative Tim Ryan for retiring Republican Senator Rob Portman's seat. Former Ohio Democratic Party Chair David Pepper says state legislatures in states like Ohio are increasing their grip on power.
Because they can pass law after law and never be held accountable, because they've created districts that they can never lose.
Finally, the Biden administration's student loan repayment freeze is set to expire in 2 weeks. Activists like Lystra Small Clowden are calling on the president to permanently cancel loan debt.
Although I achieved my academic goals, my success was short-lived, because within my household, we have accumulated over $300,000 in student debt.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A bill introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives would place limits on Supreme Court justices in the wake of several of the court's decisions. The Supreme Court Tenure Establishment and Retirement Modernization, or TERM Act, would subject justices to 18-year term limits, after which they would be retired. The bill comes at a time when confidence in the Supreme Court fell to 25% in June, according to a Gallup poll. This is down from 36% at the same time in 2021. Georgia Representative Hank Johnson introduced the bill and feels this could keep the court relevant with the American state of mind.
Our Supreme Court is not accountable to the people in its present configuration. And so therefore, term limits will help to infuse modern thinking and keep the United States Supreme Court a modern branch of our democracy.
Should Congress approve the bill, 5 of the current justices would be retired from the court throughout the next 6 years. Associate Justice Clarence Thomas would automatically be retired since he's been on the court for 31 years. Another element of the bill calls for the most recently retired justice to temporarily serve on the court should there be less than 9 justices. This is not the first time Johnson has introduced a bill to change the court's layout. In 2021, Johnson introduced the Judiciary Act of 2021, which would have expanded the Supreme Court from 9 justices to 13. Currently, the bill is being referred to a House subcommittee. Johnson feels even if this bill were to pass, there's an additional challenge in keeping the court up to date. Lifetime tenure.
We still get into this issue of lifetime tenure of justices who become stale in their thinking and more unaccountable to the public the older that they get.
Johnson feels if these bills pass, they will not only diversify the Supreme Court's thinking, but its physical look, too. Part of the hope behind the Judiciary Act of 2021 was to make the court more representative of the country through adding new justices of varying sex, age, ethnicity, and legal background. Currently, he feels there are too many justices who got their starts in silk stocking law firms. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Georgia News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Fire protection for our region just got a welcome boost. Starting August 1st, CAL FIRE's San Diego unit has exclusive use of a Type 1 helicopter for the duration of the 2022 fire season. The helicopter will operate out of the Ramona Airport to bolster the region's fleet of aviation firefighting assets, and it can be used by CAL FIRE throughout San Diego County for wildfire suppression. The call sign for the aircraft will be 95 Hotel Tango, and it has a tank capacity of 2,650 U.S. gallons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ,
This is John Tidwell.
A man was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound Friday after a three-hour standoff and garage fire in the unincorporated part of El Cajon. Sheriff's deputies responded to a 911 call shortly before 9 a.m., reporting that a man had locked himself in a house in the 700 block of 4th Street and was threatening to hurt himself with a gun after arguing with family members. When deputies arrived, they found a detached garage on fire. Firefighters with Heartland Fire and Rescue Department responded. Family members were able to get out of the house safely, fortunately. Next-door neighbors were also evacuated as deputies tried to communicate with the man. The sheriff's crisis negotiation team and mental health clinicians with the psychiatric emergency response team also assisted. Members of the sheriff's SWAT team finally cleared the home and found the man with a self-inflicted gunshot wound in the bedroom. The medical examiner's office will confirm his identity. The sheriff's bomb arson unit is investigating the fire and remained on scene afterwards. The fire was contained to the garage. August is National Wellness Month. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health or substance abuse crisis, you are not alone. There is hope. Please call or text 988 to reach trained crisis counselors. The county also has a mobile crisis response team and various locations for crisis stabilization units for those needing urgent care. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I just came from a client's house where we spent almost all of our time talking about how she needs to change her watering. When I asked her, "How often do these sprinklers come on?" she said, "Every day." And I said, "Oh my goodness." And I said, "What's your motivation in having me here today? What is it that you need us to talk about?" And she says, "I'm spending so much money on water, and it doesn't really pay for itself because I'm not getting the kind of fruit I want, and my plants don't look that great." So I thought this would be a great thing to talk about. Most of us overwater, and in overwatering, that really means we're probably watering much too shallow and much too often. Here, it's hot, and the sun beats down on the soil, and it dries out the soil. And then the roots get dried out, and then the plant suffers. How do we change that? Well, we change it by not watering every day, every other day, every third day. What we want to do is possibly not even change the mechanics of how we're watering. We just want to go to the time clock and change the timing. If you're watering for 5 minutes every day, you would do much better for your plants to water 20 minutes every fourth day, and then possibly even stretch it out from there with a few other tricks I'll tell you. But the main thing to understand is, if you are watering every day for just a few minutes, then what's happening is the roots are only going to grow where the water is, in the top 4 to 5 to 6 inches of soil. And in that depth, there is no resistance built in for when the Santa Anas come, for when it gets to be past the 4th of July and it's 100 degrees in East County or higher. Those poor plants have to depend on where their roots have grown in that surface area of the soil. So what happens when you change that? What happens is that the more water you give, the less frequently, the further down the roots will go. So if you can train your plant roots by watering correctly, the roots will grow down deeper. They will withstand our heavy, heavy winds and that beating down sun of midsummer, and your plants will be much healthier and much happier. This is especially true of plants that come that are either native here, which you hardly ever water, or the plants that most of us use, the Mediterranean type plants. These are plants that are used to going a while between waterings. Your citrus trees. People come to me and say their citrus isn't doing very well. It looks kind of funny. I say, "How often are you watering?" "Every other day." "Okay, that's the problem." You don't even have to go look to find out what the problem is. What you need to do is water your citrus between maybe once a week. If it's a big old tree and it's been in a long time, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I have a lemon tree on my property that we water religiously in June, July, August, and September, once each month.
But when we do water, we water it nice and deep. We water it so that the water goes down at least 2 feet deep. Makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that we're going to do with our watering issue is we're going to mulch everything. But that's something I'll talk about in another one of these episodes.
Jack Murphy was a mover and shaker in San Diego's sports world. His statue once greeted fans exiting the trolley at the main entrance of the Murph, a nickname attached to the former Qualcomm Stadium. Now you can see that statue of the veteran sports editor and columnist with his dog Abe loyally at his side outside of the new Snapdragon Stadium, looking north toward Los Angeles. That's fitting because he played a key role in convincing the Los Angeles Chargers to move south to San Diego way back when. Some say if he was still alive, they might still be in town. Murphy has an extensive list of contributions to San Diego's sports legacy. Longtime fans might well label him the Tony Gwynn of San Diego's sports reporters. He was that important to the city's sports profile. Prompted by a recent column written by Kirk Kenny, a sports writer at Murphy's old stomping grounds at the Union Tribune, reporter J.W. August with East County Magazine went to see the statue at its new home. He found the Snapdragon Stadium in Mission Valley bustling with the many things needed to have the stadium ready for its upcoming debut with Aztecs games. August asked security and construction folks if they knew where the Jack Murphy statue was, but they'd never heard of him. Maybe that's understandable, since he passed in 1980 at the age of 57. August says he eventually found the statue of Jack Murphy and Abe, the dog, but the plaque beside the statue only lists the names of the well-connected folks responsible for creation of the statue in 2003, only the donors. Nowhere can one find anything identifying who Murphy was, who the dog was, and why there's a statue in the first place. So August asked San Diego State University if there are any plans to place the original plaque describing Murphy's accomplishments. Jamie McConaughey at San Diego State University Athletics told him the statue and plaque are complete as is. When August persisted, McConaughey said there are no plans to add a bio as of now. The statue stands where the media will enter the stadium. Hopefully, fans arriving through the same gate may take a minute and do a Google search to find out more about the guy with the dog. If they do, they will see how Murphy played a key role in bringing the Padres to town as well. He was a powerful influence in San Diego, spending 29 years in front of a typewriter banging out columns that did much to raise the city's sports profile. Thanks to his encouragement of voters, San Diego Stadium was built and later renamed Jack Murphy Stadium. Then it became Qualcomm Stadium, and now the area is home to Snapdragon Stadium. Jack Murphy's legacy is unchallenged, but for now, his statue will remain a mystery to passing fans. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.